13. Sunday, a day of blustery showers, particularly to the north and the west, but a reminder again of that amber warning to be prepared for those very strong winds and the heavy rain overnight Sunday into Monday.
All sounding very lively. Thanks, Susan. Susan Powell there at the BBC Weather Centre. Now, our book of the week. Jennifer Saunders first started to make us laugh with her comedy partner Dawn French in the 1980s and has continued to do so ever since. Tonight, the comedian is frank in her account of dealing with breast cancer. First of all, French and Saunders are on tour in New Zealand as Jennifer Saunders reads the last instalment from her memoir, Bonkers, My Life in Laughs.
Dawn French and I are in a tattoo parlour in Auckland, New Zealand. It is 2009, the last leg of our final Still Alive tour. We've been driving past this tattoo parlour with its bright neon sign every night en route to the theatre. I don't know how it happened, but Dawn and I seem to have had the same idea at the same time. We had been trying to think of something to do to mark the end of the tour and, in effect, the end of the act. I suggest a tattoo of a gravestone with R.I.P. F.N.S. on it. We could have it on our bottoms. Dawn thinks maybe something a bit prettier. The nice tattoo artist, who it would appear has practised mainly on himself, brings us a hefty folder containing just about every design of tattoos imaginable. We flick through it. Eventually, we turn a page and see a little star. A little dark star. We like the star. We decide to have two stars each. We're going crazy now. Dawn will have them on her wrist and I will have them on my ankle. Some minutes, and quite a lot of blood it seems, later, we are done. We are pleased. We think we look cool. We have tattoos. I mean, who'd have thunk it? Our very last night in Auckland was the end of the act, the end of French and Saunders. It's funny, but Dawn and I were actually less emotional than some other people were about it. As the show finished, we were bombarded with flowers and chocolate on stage. It was kind and appreciative, and I know we are going to miss the thrill of that live work. And that feeling, that incredible feeling, when your audience are having fun. That they are enjoying you, enjoying what you're doing, and most crucially, enjoying each other. I honestly think that is what audiences have been buying into all these years. They've been buying into our friendship. They love that we love each other. But it's not totally over. Nowadays we have a show on Radio 2 that brings us together on high days and holidays and gives us the opportunity to sit together and think up funnies.
Hello, it's Froggy French and Jellybean Saunders here.
Hello.
Again with you for the next 2 hours on Radio 2 this Easter Monday lunchtime. After the Australia and New Zealand summer tour with Dawn and retiring the act, I had planned a year off. Instead, I got breast cancer. I had always had regular mammograms and was aware I was overdue my latest, but only by about 7 months. I don't know why I always find it so hard to get around to organising these things. I mean, it's a phone call and then an hour at most of your time. But I would always put it off and put it off. Eventually, I found myself at the clinic. Now, at this point, can I just say that I will never understand why they make you take your clothes off and put on a gown that does up at the back? I can't do bows on my back. I can't reach my back. I'm not sure about you, but my tits are at the front. Anyway, I put them in the boob press. Never an entirely pleasant experience, but over soon enough. And off I went, confident that the results would be clear. I mean, I had breastfed, which I sort of thought exempted you. Next day was a Saturday, so I was surprised and in fact still in bed when my GP rang. Odd. He said that something, a small lump, had shown up on the mammogram. My heart started to thump. It was a very small lump, but would I go in and see him? Well, when? Now. Okay. Aid was away rehearsing for a panto in Canterbury, so I was on my own. I lay there for a while and settled it in my head. Time seems to move slowly at moments like these. In his office, my GP tells me all the facts. It's a tiny lump. It's only just big enough to be detected. And there is a plan. Another mammo, see the surgeon. Biopsy, see the surgeon. At home, I set about telling my family. Telling other people is actually one of the hardest things because you don't want them to worry, but then you don't want them to find out from someone else. Aid was calm, which I like. The last thing I wanted to do was have to deal with someone else's shit. I mean, to have to be the rallier. So, I was back to the clinic to have yet another scan. In the gown that does up at the back so everyone can see your pants as you walk along to the mammogram room. The results, plus me fully dressed again, were then sent post-haste to the surgeon. It seemed there were now two small lumps in the left breast, but he was reassuring. They were small and could have been there a long time. No rush. But let's operate quite soon. Why don't you go now, this minute, and have a biopsy? So I did. When the results were in, I had an appointment to see the surgeon again. Aid by now was giving his Captain Hook in Canterbury, so I took my friend Betty with me. As expected, it was cancer. But it didn't appear to be fast-growing. Hurrah! So the surgeon had a plan of action. Hey, double hurrah! The two lumps were quite deep in the tissue of the left breast, which was good, because when he operated, he thought he could remove enough healthy tissue around them without having to remove the whole breast. Now, this is the only time I have ever been thankful for enormous knockers. So this meant that the left breast, he explained, would be considerably smaller than the right breast. I see, I say. Basically, it would be reduced and lifted, he said. I see. Yeah, I'm quite interested now. If I do that, would you want the other breast done at the same time? Or, I'm confused, have different sized breasts, or have the other one done at a later date? Are you mad? The surgeon drew it out for us on a scrap of paper. It was very basic. One big tit and one small pert lifted tit. Doing both at once would mean a longer operation and recovery time, but that was what I wanted, and as far as I was concerned, the surgeon was a god. I could feel Betty getting anxious that I wasn't thinking through all the information and instead was just getting overexcited at the prospect of a tit lift, which I was. I mean, this was a result. Betty, however, was brilliant. Trying to stem my rising hysterical pleasure, she explored all the options and the advantages and disadvantages of each. A couple of weeks later, I was in hospital waiting for my breast lift. Sorry, lumpectomy. So, here we go. Onto the operating trolley and straight to needle in arm from the anaesthetist and out for the count. So, chemotherapy. The first one is a bit scary because you have no idea how you're going to feel. I had my own little cubicle and Aid and the girls came along to keep me company and have a look. First, the saline drip, some paracetamol, some antihistamine, and then the big boy. A huge horse syringe full of red liquid. Then more saline, and then wait. And what comes is like the most enormous hangover you've ever had in your whole life. It's like a night on mixed spirits, wine and grappa. It's a real cracker. It's a humdinger. When we left, I was walking very slowly and clutching a large bag of various pills and anti-sickness medication, which all worked brilliantly. They tell you to keep active, so I swept the patio ceaselessly. From one day to the next, you never really know how you're going to feel. Some days you can go for a long walk, but the next you feel breathless after a few steps. Some days you stay in bed, sometimes you just have to get up. The weird thing is, I came to quite enjoy my visits to the clinic. Because if you're me, having treatment is a fairly good thing. because your life has a routine and a pattern. You do what you're told. And I find that quite liberating. Friends would drop by with papers and I had a rota of company keepers. When my hair started to thin, I cut it short and then shorter, until we all knew it was time for the clippers to come out, and my youngest daughter Freya shaved my head. I'd always been certain that I had a pan head, all flat at the back. But lo and behold, my head actually had a shape. I looked quite cool. I found myself stroking my head a lot. Finally, Aid and I had matching hairdos. Now, I didn't keep my cancer a secret. It was just private. I have great girlfriends and family who rallied round and who I am incredibly thankful for. Because, of course, there are times when it isn't possible to stay positive, times when you feel completely bloody shit. There are times when you want to cry all day. It was midsummer when my hair started to regrow. I had gone to stay in the south of France with our friends Betty and David. One night, before we set off for a party, I had to make a decision about whether to wear the old wiglet or not. It was so hot that I took the decision to ditch it and go with a light sprinkling of new growth that had appeared. It was a terribly glamorous party in a restaurant on a beach. And the photographer, Richard Young, was there, snapping the arty crowd and me. I didn't mind because Richard's one of the good guys. During the party, he came up to me and asked if I wanted to hold back the photos of me because my breast cancer hadn't been made public. I had a quick think, but told him it was fine. There was no way I wanted to go back to the wig. The pic went in the papers, with lovely Richard Young, unprompted, giving all the proceeds to a breast cancer charity. And for a few days it was news. And then, just as quickly, it was over. Though I did fear that from then on I would always be referred to as Brave Jen. I made a statement via my agent Maureen that just said I'd caught it early and now it was gone. I got lots of correspondence from people telling me that was a reckless statement and that I was only in remission and it could come back. But as far as I was concerned, it was gone and the chances of it coming back were and are really small. You move on, and I did. And as all the cab drivers say, nice to see you out and about again, Jen. And I was. In the summer of 2010, Aid and I were in our kitchen in London and got the greatest, happiest phone call from our daughter, Ella. Her boyfriend, Dan, had asked her to marry him and she had accepted. Our little Ella Bella Bing Bong Fish Can Fly was going to get married. The girl who had arrived looking like a little cross kidney bean had grown into a beautiful young woman and was going to get married. And to the best person she could marry, Dan Furlong. Aid and I love Dan. He's a builder and a joiner and a man who can put his mind to anything. He's also a brilliant washer-upper and that makes him actually perfect. And then, after a wonderful wedding, just when you think life is good, it gets better. Ella announces that she is pregnant. And 8 months later, Freddie Furlong is born. Now, I realise I am prejudiced, but Freddie was beautiful then and has grown even more divine since. I mean, even the midwife said he was scrumptious. We are grandparents. If we're not talking about Freddie, we are looking at pictures of Freddie. He is a little king. When I look at him, I know with conviction that he will never be able to do any wrong in my eyes. So there you have it. Life moves on. Aid is happy with his work and music, and I am happy pottering. So what else? What's next? I hear you cry. Well, the truth is, I don't know. And do you know what? I like it that way. There is no plan. Right, I'm off now to do some sweeping.
Jennifer Saunders was reading from her memoir, Bonkers, My Life in Laughs. The abridger was Richard Hamilton and the producer was Elizabeth Allard. And on the Book of the Week pages of the Radio 4 website, you can find some snaps from Jennifer Saunders' photo album, along with information about Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Now, the shipping forecast, issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday, the 26th of October. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, Dogger, Thames, Dover, Wight, Portland, Plymouth, Fitzroy, Seoul, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low, northern Scotland, 989, moving away rather quickly north-eastwards. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, North Utsira, southerly or southeasterly 6 to gale 8, veering southwesterly 4 or 5 for a time, rain or showers, good, occasionally poor. South Utsira, 40s, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher. Southerly or southwesterly 5.